Hey, thank you, Jerome. As we're getting started, Flavel, did you get your microphone and everything you need? You did? Is everything okay over here? Okay, cool. Well, while they're getting all set up, I want to remind you guys, a lot of you have come in that weren't here last night. I wanted to let you know that we do have the study guides available from Robert Cox's studies that he came and shared last year with us, Sharing the Gospel from A to Z, five-part series on sharing the gospel with somebody. These are study guides to help you teach your students how to do these studies with people and for you to learn yourself if you don't already. I'd like to remind you that on the Campus Ministry United website, we have all of our lessons from our previous workshops. We've got all of the lessons from this past Tulsa workshop posted in our audio video section. So if you'd like to go there, the address is www.campusministryunited.com. If you're particularly interested in learning these studies, you can go down to the CMU 2007 workshop section and you can get all of Robert's material there. And so this is really good stuff. It's $4 though for this study guide, and if you would like to buy one of those, or if you'd like to buy many of those, see Lynn. They're not making money off of them. This is just kind of what it costs for them to make it. Also, if you guys have just come in and if you've not gone over and gotten a folder with all the handouts and everything, for you guys that just registered, head over to this table. We've got a bunch of handouts for you. And if we're running out of some, I'll need to go make more copies. But anyway, one of them is this little booklet right here. This is the stuff that Flavel's going to be going over. I want you guys to know that this campus ministry, the campus ministry statistics that he's going to be sharing, this is the first time he's shared those anywhere. So this is brand new stuff, and this is going to really raise some eyebrows, I think, in Church of Christ circles. But Dr. Yakeley is, as he will tell you, chronologically gifted. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that means. I'm sure he can explain. We lovingly refer to him as Flava Flav around here. So... we love Dr. Yakeley. Dr. Yakeley has been in ministry for a number of years. He's written a number of books. He is a respected statistician, not just in restoration movement circles, but in just Christian circles worldwide. He is a social scientist who earned a PhD, I believe, in Illinois somewhere. I can't remember the name of the university. But anyway, we are very blessed to have him. He's going to be sharing the results of how many years of research went into this? Okay, I thought it was three. So this is 3 years of work right here, and he's going to share it with us this morning. So you guys give a warm round of applause to Dr. Flavel Yakeley.
Well, if I'd known I was going to get that kind of introduction, I would have come in here with a clock around. And let me see the horns on the... Well, anyhow... Okay, can all of you see the screen? What I'm going to be talking about is what I firmly believe. I've been studying church growth, that kind of statistics, for a long time, before most of you were born. I'm convinced that one of the most important things we need to do in order to I'm getting a pretty good echo back there. Can we bring it down a little? Okay, that I think's better. Campus ministry offers probably our best potential for evangelism. And I firmly believe that churches of Christ in the United States need to plant hundreds of new campus ministries at state-supported public institutions throughout the United States. And we need to devote a much larger portion of our financial and manpower resources to this kind of ministry. Amen. In order to get at that, I would suggest first, there we go. First reading assignment. Do all of you take Church Growth Magazine? Oh, come on, people. This is the leading publication in Churches of Christ dealing with the subject of church growth evangelism. John Ellis is the publisher, and in this latest edition, there is an excellent article by none other than our own Wes Waddell, in which he makes an excellent case. You've already heard a good bit of it last night, but he makes an excellent case for building evangelistic campus ministries. Now, the next reading assignment is my booklet, and these were handed out. First part of this deals with some comparisons involving Churches of Christ and looking at other major religious groups in America, patterns of growth and decline. But the starting about page 12 on to the end, most of this comes from a study that I've been doing for the Christian Higher Education Foundation. Each year, the presidents of Christian colleges and universities, these schools serving the same constituency among Churches of Christ in the United States, these presidents meet, and for several years they've been talking about the need for much more recent and more reliable data to answer some questions of particular interest to them as administrators of these schools, but also of general interest to church leaders, you know, throughout the brotherhood. They're the rest of that list. I guess it was about 3-4 years ago, Dr. Burks, the president here at Harding, asked me to design a research project to investigate these questions that the presidents wanted investigated. And in 2006, the presidents approved the funding for my research proposal, and I've been working on that ever since. I presented a preliminary report of this research to the presidents at their meeting last November, and the material in that booklet on good news, bad news is essentially from that preliminary report. I'll be presenting the final report at their meeting this November, and there's a part of that report, the part dealing with campus ministries, that has not been presented to any audience yet. You are the first. Okay, here are the parts of that study. The main thing we were trying to do was get at a sample of members of Churches of Christ who have graduated from high school in the previous 10-year period. We studied 97 through 2006. And one of the things that we have found in previous research is that the people who drop out of Churches of Christ after they leave home are not very likely to respond to our surveys. And so we used an indirect approach. We went to church leaders and asked them to identify the young people in their congregations who had graduated from high school those 10 years, and then answer just a few questions about them. Now, that's a methodology that I've used in over 100 congregations where I did congregational assessments over the last, at least the last 3 decades. And it involves a lot of work, but the church leaders have generally been able to provide that information. And that's the approach that we used. We started with a mailing that went to every church that has a valid email address. And you wouldn't believe how often churches change their email provider and their email address is no longer valid. But we got a couple of thousand that way. And then we used what my friends in the U.S. Postal Service do not like us to call snail mail. But, you know, we did a regular mailing to about 3,000 churches. And we knew that most of these churches, when they saw how big the job was, would not be able to do this study. But we got over 200 responses. Now, those were not random. But what we did, we took those responses and we used just 100 of them that fit a cluster sampling model. In other words, those 100 churches match Churches of Christ generally in terms of location, congregational size, racial, ethnic identity, you know, some demographic things like that. And in those 100 churches, or through them, we now have accumulated data on almost 5,000 young people who had graduated from high school in that previous 10-year period. We also did a survey of students here at Harding and at 10 other Christian colleges and universities, have a little more than 3,000 participants in that study. And we did alumni surveys. The first one we did last year, and let me see, we got a little over 2,000 responses on that one. Then we did a follow-up this year, 2,500. But I'm guessing that the part of this study that you're going to be most interested in is the survey of campus ministries at public colleges and universities. And let's see what we get this time. Yeah, here are the questions. Need to back up a little bit. Here are the questions that we asked church leaders to answer about these young people in their congregations who had graduated in the last 10 years. Yeah. How many of these are still faithful members of your congregation or another congregation of Churches of Christ? How many have joined some other religious group? How many just quit church altogether? We ask about their marital status. Do they have any church leadership role? And did they attend college? And if so, where? You know, did they attend a Christian college? Now, here were some questions that the presidents were especially interested in. What's the size of the available pool out there? How many young people are graduating from high school in Churches of Christ every year? How many of them go on to college? And how many of those who are college-bound actually attend Christian colleges? Have you noticed all the people milling around downstairs? They're here usually with their parents. The parents have been off in the big room over there learning how to deal with homesickness and things like that. And this is the summer experience for the kids that will be coming here in late August. Well, we need to know how big the pool is and how many are attending Christian colleges. And are there any differences between those who attend Christian colleges and those who attend the public institutions? I need to warn you before I share any of these results with you. that there are at least three groups of people in churches of Christ who may find it difficult to believe some things in that report. The title for the report, Good News, Bad News, comes from the reality that the good news is that the bad news we've been hearing isn't true, or at least it's been highly exaggerated and misunderstood. The bad news is that the good news isn't anywhere near as good as it ought to be. Okay, there are some people in the church who want change. And in case any of you have been warned against change agents, I need to warn you that I've been labeled as one of those.
Amen.
I hope that all of us are revolutionary change agents, because the church really needs some change. But it needs the right kind of change. Well, some of these people who have some pet change that they want to promote, you know, the first step in their sales pitch is the need step. They have to show there's a need for the change. And some of them find it hard to believe that things are not as bad as they have been claiming. But then we have the people who defend the status quo. They oppose all change. And they may find it hard to believe that things are not as good as they have claimed. But then we have the people, and this is a very common human characteristic, people who notice a few dramatic cases that they have seen, people they've known, churches they've known, and they tend to project that onto all members of churches of Christ throughout the nation. And they may have a hard time believing that the sample that they have experienced is not representative of churches of Christ throughout the nation. Now, if any of you are in any of those categories, all I know to ask you to do is to look at the evidence. So let's start with this thing about how many are graduating from high school and going on to college. Now, we know something from the education statistics people at Washington. We know from them that approximately 1% of the U.S. population graduates from high school each year. And we know that a little less than 2/3 go on to college. Now, if we didn't have any other source of information, that would be the best guess about how many coming out of churches of Christ graduate each year and go on to college each year. Now, since we're comparing churches of Christ with the whole U.S. population, all ages, I mean, some of you saw the picture of the little baby with the sucker in his mouth that was up there earlier. You know, from the cradle all the way to those of us who have one foot in the grave and the other foot on a banana peel, you know, the very chronologically gifted. Some of us are not only chronologically gifted, we're vertically challenged. Have you noticed that, Wes? I really have to look up to Wes. Okay. Here's what we found in the survey of churches. It's the same number of our adherents, 1%, who graduate from high school each year. Church statistician used the adherent statistic when they want to compare with population norms, people of all ages. the adherents in our case would be all of the members plus their kiddies who go to church with them, but they're a little too young to be baptized yet. So we take the whole church family and we call those the adherents. Well, 1% of them are graduating from high school each year. And there's some people who have noticed the graying of the pew, and they were surprised to find out that the number was that high, 1%. Same as in the nation generally. But here's another thing that surprised them. 80% of the kids graduating from high school in Churches of Christ go on to attend some kind of college for some period of time. It may be a local community college for just one semester, but at least, you know, they've attended college. That's about 80% of them. And using those kind of figures, here is what we get on people graduating from high school in Churches of Christ. It's a little over 16,000 each year, and a little over 13,000 who go on to college. Now, I didn't reprint all of these things in that booklet. For any of you who really have a need for number crunching, I ran off copies of these PowerPoint thingies. I've only recently learned how to speak PowerPoint.
We'll put this PowerPoint on our website.
Okay, put it on the website so you can get it there. For years, I've operated on the theory that power corrupts and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. But I finally got my granddaughter, who's a student here at Harding, to teach me how to put these things together. And she was frustrated at my slowness in learning. And she said, "Granddaddy, we learned to do that in the third grade." Well, anyhow, that's the figure on what we call Churches of Christ in the United States. Do any of you have that directory that 21st Century Christian puts out? You ought to have it at your church office. Churches of Christ, United States. And you should have received a mailing just recently asking for updates. Carl Royster is the fellow that puts that together. And go back and look. See if you have that card and respond to that. It's important that you get the data in and, you know, get it right. But one of the problems is that in that kind of directory, the effort is to list everybody who wants to be listed. If they want to be counted with other Churches of Christ, they count them. But you need to know that in the Churches of Christ in the United States, it works out that 75% of the congregations with 80% of the members, 87% of the members and children are in mainstream congregations. What we mean by that is that they are similar enough to one another that no significant barriers exist. But that also means that a fourth of the congregations in that directory have some doctrine or practice that sets them apart and limits their fellowship. We have about 2,000 non-institutional congregations. They don't like church support of orphans' homes, church, the sponsoring church method of cooperation. Don't call them antis. That's kind of a put-down. Call them non-institutional. That's what they prefer. And then we have several hundred non-class congregations. Don't call them no class. That's pejorative. But they will respond if you say, "Yeah, we don't believe in having Sunday school." And then we have a bunch of one-cup churches. Have any of you gone to a one-cup church before? Okay.
On
yeah.
The front row,
sit on the front row. Yeah. Because the fella sitting next to you, if he gets it first, he's probably has tuberculosis. And his wife sitting next to him, she has a habit of dipping snuff, you know. Did you know some Christians used to do that? Yeah, that's what killed the one cup movement in a lot of places. But you know, the people who out of conscience say, no, we all have to drink out of the same cup. They split over what you put in the cup. There are a few of them that said, hey, the Bible says wine. And so we're going to put fermented stuff. They're called the Mogan David faction. But most of the one cup churches are the Welch's grape juice faction. But then they split over what you do with the loaf. You know, there's some of them say, if we're going to have one cup, we have to have one undivided loaf that's passed around, and each one snaps a piece off of it. And the other said, no, you can crack the crackers in advance and pass them around. They call each other the snapper and cracker churches of Christ. And I don't mean to make fun of people. I think we need to respect the conscience of people. And you need to know, though, that it's probably misleading if you used all of those figures. And what we need to do is look at the figures. Most of the students coming to Christian colleges and universities come from the mainstream churches of Christ. And if you look at it that way, we have a little over 14,000 graduating each year from high school, and an average of about 11,400 who are college bound. Here's what we're finding. Approximately 20% do not go on to college. And a little less than a third attend a Christian college or university, and almost half attend a public, state-supported, or at least some other kind of institution. I used to be head of the speech department at University of Tulsa, which is a very high-quality, private, secular school. They started as a Presbyterian school and lost their soul somewhere along the way. But, when I taught there, we sent all three of our children to Oklahoma Christian. That's where they got their degrees. We wanted them to go to a Christian school. And the University of Tulsa was in the other category. Well, if you look just at the college bound, almost two-thirds go to state-supported schools. And let me see if it's the next one there. Yeah, 37.5% of the college bound in churches of Christ attend a Christian college or university. And that's a whole bunch more than the 15% that we've heard for years. Have any of you heard the myth that only 15% of young people in churches of Christ who go to college attend one of these Christian colleges? You hadn't heard that. Well, if you'd lived around schools like this, you would have heard that. That's what our fundraisers and recruiters had believed for years. Actually, they've been doing a lot better job than we gave them credit for doing. They're getting a good many more. If you have trouble believing those statistical projections, I want you to see some hard data. These are not projections from a survey. Every one of those numbers there was actually a human being type person someone who came to these colleges and universities as an entering freshman in those years. Those are the actual numbers from 16 church-related schools here in the United States. But the number that actually showed up is almost exactly the same as the number projected from our survey, and that's an indication of the validity of the survey. I think you can trust it. Okay, let's look for a minute at retention rates. Last year, there was an article that misquoted Brother Stringfellow and me in the Christian Chronicle. They got pretty close, though, didn't they? It was an article on retention rates in churches of Christ. And when they asked me, I told them, well, the last time there was a nationwide survey on this subject, Lewis, Dodd, and Tippins were doing this study in the early 90s. How many of you have read their book, The Gospel According to Generation X? Well, if you find one, it's almost out of date now. We need a new one on the Gospel According to the Millennial Generation. But their study found that 55% are staying in churches of Christ, 45% are dropping out. Now let me share with you something that I found. This is not a scientific sample. It's over 100 churches where I have done congregational assessments and where we had church leaders make a list of all the young people who had graduated from high school going back as far as they could in church records. And what we found was exactly what Lewis, Dodd, and Tippins found on the retention. Little over half were staying with churches of Christ. But we found something different about the dropouts. About a third were dropping out of churches of Christ as soon as they left home, and they never came back. But about 12% dropped out as soon as they left home. And a lot of them were going to the kind of schools where you're working. And our survey indicates that about 85% of young people in churches of Christ who go to these state-supported schools quit attending church as soon as they leave home. And they never show up at a local church. They never show up for your campus ministry activities. But one of the things we found in this study is that some of those, after they get out of college, after they get married, particularly after they start having children, they come back to church. So the dropout rate, in this study, it's 58.2%. And that's a little better than the retention rate that Lewis, Dodd, and Tippins reported, but it's not a statistically significant difference. 21.1% have joined some other religious group. 20.7% have given up on church altogether. They just don't go anywhere. Let me show you some things that relate to the dropout and retention. That first column is those who did not attend college anywhere. And less than half are staying in churches of Christ. Less than half of them. Then the next one is those who attended Christian college or university. And we've had two surveys on that. One of them said 85%, the other one 90%. And then 8.8% that's wrong. I've dropped a digit there somewhere. 48.8% attended a public college or university, and half of them, you know, dropped out. But let me show you another thing. I found this pretty interesting. We asked the church leaders in these 100 churches, how do you think members of Churches of Christ around the country would view your congregation? And they picked one of five labels. A, much more liberal or progressive. B, a little more liberal or progressive. C, about in the middle of the road, moderate. D, a little more conservative or traditional. And E, much more conservative or traditional. Now, we have a handout that covers some of these things that we'll get to in a minute. There were 8 churches in A and in E, the two extremes. 374 students out of the sample were in those much more liberal or progressive, 350 in the churches that they said they were much more conservative or traditional. The dropout rates were almost identical. This is retention, 39.4. You know, about two-thirds of the kids growing up in those churches left. You may have read in the Heretic Detector or, you know, some of the other right-wing journals that this research that I've done, did you know there used to be a brotherhood paper named the Heretic Detector? What was it, Cryfield that published that? Now, Jim, you're too young. You wouldn't have gone by. I think I remember that guy. Well, there are a lot of journals that fill the same role as the Heretic Detector. And some of them said, well, Yakeley's research proves that it's the liberal churches that are really the big problem. But look, the difference between the retention rate in the liberal churches and the conservative churches was not statistically significant. The problem is not liberalism, it's not conservatism, it's extremism. The churches that are radically different from those in the middle are producing kids that do not stay in Churches of Christ. And let me show you where they're going. And here's a big difference. 75% of those growing up in the much more liberal churches join some other religious group, typically a community-type, independent, non-denominational kind of group. The ones that join mainline denominations usually marry into those denominations. But, you know, if you grow up in one of those more progressive churches and drop out, you're likely to go to some other religious group. But look at the bottom there. If you grow up in one of those much more conservative churches and drop out, you are likely to just drop out. And I don't think I have this on the charts anywhere, but in our follow-up studies, we found that the people dropping out in these most conservative churches were kind of marginal in the first place. They weren't the leaders of the group. They weren't very spiritually minded. But in the more progressive churches, it's some of the brightest, most spiritually minded that we're losing. So there are some differences based on the kind of church. Okay, retention rates. The highest retention rate in this study was for young people who attended a Christian college or university and very quickly got involved with a local church. But the second highest retention rate was members of the church who attended a public institution and very quickly got involved. They actually placed membership with a local church, got involved with the local church, and got involved in campus ministry if they were at a school where we had a campus ministry. That retention rate was better than the ones who come to a Christian school like Harding but never get involved with a local church. They just kind of float around. And the scary thing is that there are an awful lot of floaters out there. Do we have that handout on the survey, or has it already been passed out? Okay, there should be. We did a survey that was independent of the one that Wes and his group did. There were a few items that were similar. We started off with just these demographic things about the name of the ministry, sponsoring church, size of the congregation, and the schools where the people attended. Number of students involved. The average was 47.6. Now you may wonder how you can get 6/10 of a student. Let me tell you, I've got some in some of my classes that would pretty well qualify there. Okay, but in these 60 responses, that was the average, and the total was 2,856 students participating in 60 campus ministries. And we asked, what is the focus? 3.3% said that they were evangelistically oriented. 20% said our orientation is keeping Christians faithful. You know, circle up the wagons. Don't let all those atheists out there corrupt our young people. 76% said, well, a balance of both. But I want you to know that the statistics do not bear out that balance. In my study, you know, we ask, in the last year, how many people have you baptized through your campus ministry? And 35% said zero, none, zilch, nada. And in Wes's study, it was 33%. That's a kind of convergent validity. Two independent studies finding the same thing. And in my study, it was 65% that said fewer than 3 baptisms. And Wes found 62.6. That's an average of 2.35 baptisms per campus ministry in that year. 2.35. Maybe there was one of them you got him only a third of the way under. I don't know. No, that's a total of 141 baptisms. The good news is that we baptized 141 people last year through campus ministry. The bad news is we baptized 141 people through campus ministries, and that wasn't enough. We had one question in there about how many of these were re-baptisms. And the reason that came up, there are a bunch of people out there who are still in shell shock. No, we now call it post-traumatic stress disorder. From the Crossroads Boston discipling movement, and in some of the churches in that movement, they had an awful lot of rebaptisms. Only 2 out of the 141 reported baptisms were people who had already been baptized in churches of Christ where they were growing up. I think most of the congregations where I preach, we had at least that ratio of rebaptisms. You know, sometimes you baptize them a little early and they really didn't know what they were doing. Did any of you work in camp? I remember one camp, I didn't actually work in it, I was just on the board. But we planned a camp for the little kiddies where we could do some great Bible teaching, have tremendous fellowship, really inspiring song service and preaching, and never sing the invitation song. Because we knew if we did, we'd baptize the entire camp Monday night. And by Tuesday night, half of the kids were saying, I was so young when I was baptized that I don't know what I was doing and I want to be rebaptized. And it probably wouldn't mean much of anything at all. Well, there are some people who need to be baptized right. And 2 out of 141, that's not bad. You guys need to know, though, that you do suffer the harm of what that discipling movement did to brotherhood perceptions. And it's why a lot of church leaders are scared to death of campus ministry. And you need to show them that you can be evangelistic without being controlling and manipulative and those negative kinds of things. Oh, here is another thing. There's a popular conception that in these campus ministries, you get a bunch of freshmen, but very few of them come back as sophomores, juniors, seniors, graduate students. But look at those figures. This is the reality, and you're getting a pretty good sample. Now, maybe not in your campus ministry, but in the 60 that reported, that dropout or drop-off is about what you expect in the enrollment at these schools. So that answers one of the myths. Let me see. We had some other survey questions. What percent of the students involved in campus ministry are not yet members of Churches of Christ? The average was 29%. The range was from 0 to 98. You guys are all over the board on that one. How is your campus ministry conducted? 18% all volunteer leaders. 5% one part-time leader. The majority, 55%, have one full-time campus minister. And 22% have more. You know, maybe one full-time, one part-time, or two or three full-time. How many members of the Churches of Christ attend the school where your ministry works but don't participate in your campus ministry? And most didn't know. We can help you estimate that if it's relevant. We asked in the survey, how many of you kind of grew up in Churches of Christ? It was 86%. Next question was current religious affiliation. It was 87%. We have to have one campus ministry convert in that sample somewhere. Levels of church involvement. You may have to wave at me if I...
Yeah, about 5 minutes.
Okay, I think I can wrap it up. This first column is how the campus ministry students... And I need to warn you that the sample is pretty small. By the time a lot of the campus ministers got the word on this, the kids had already left for the summer. So some of you may need to hit the ground running in, whenever school starts, and ask them to take that survey. There are instructions on the last page of that handout on where you can do the online survey. But in the small sample that we have to date, it was 18% who said either that I live close enough to this school that I'm still a member of my home congregation. I didn't have place membership anywhere. I was already a member there. Or they said, when I started at this school, I placed membership with a local congregation. But look what it was in the sample of Christian college students and Christian college alumni. It's only a fourth of Christian college students who actually are members of a local congregation. Most of them are spectators. Okay, some say, well, I never placed membership, but there is one congregation that I regularly attend. There are the figures. That's the one that most Christian college students check. But a lot of them, in this survey of campus ministry students, well, you know, I visit various churches depending on where my friends are going, on where there's an exciting speaker or a class. But we have an awful lot of people that are attending as spectators, as audience, not active participants. That's a problem that Christian colleges and universities need to address, and it's a problem that you guys in campus ministry need to address. Have any of you read my book, Why Churches Grow? Yeah, I know you did. I assigned it for reading in the class. One of the things I said in there was that we have a problem in a lot of our personal evangelism where the people have had no contact with the church as an assembled functioning body in the process of their conversion, and they feel no identification with the church after their conversion. And it's really important to get connected with the church. Imperfect though it may be, it is the bride of Christ. And we need to get these people connected. And too many are just shopping around as customers. Problem we need to address. Okay, in that handout, I want to show you how to read the last part of it. We ask, you know, how important are these various reasons for selecting the school that you attend and for not selecting a Christian college or university? And they can check, this is the most important reason, all the way down to, oh, that wasn't a factor in my decision. Now, those are nominal data. You can't calculate a mean from names. But what you can do is kind of artificially assign values to each of those, one for the lowest, five for the highest, and calculate a mean. But then you need to translate that mean back into the words that it represented. And now that the statistic lesson is over, one last thing I want to point out. We've had a myth going around Harding for a good while that the divorce rate among Harding grads is higher than the national average. And that's based on some people who said, well, when I came back to homecoming, went to the reunion of my club, most of them were divorced, and they dropped out of the church. And when I talked to people like that, I said, brother, you were in the wrong club. You know, your club is not representative of the whole brotherhood. Among members of Churches of Christ, who graduated from high school in the past 10 years, only 4.2% have already married and divorced. That's just about half of the national average. Now, remember, this is just a snapshot of the early years. And then among the alumni, 22.1% are still single, never married. 71.7% are still married to their first spouse. I don't know what happened to the alignment there. 5.4% are divorced, and less than 1% are widowed. Now, a divorce rate is the number of people in a population who have divorced divided by the number who have ever married. So 77.9% have married, 6.9% of them have divorced, but a divorce rate of less than 7% is a lot lower than the national average. And that's the end of that. And we're now at the question time.
Check, 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 check. All right. It's funny you mentioned the number of baptisms. We actually found 270 baptisms last year just in the ministries we surveyed. Over 40% of those came from nine ministries, and those nine ministries that we talked about last night. We talked about the characteristics that were in those ministries. I know a lot of you guys came in late. We're going to post all that information, all those numbers and everything on the website. There's a PowerPoint presentation that will kind of take you through all that. So if you missed it last night, we'll get to that, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
let
me point
out that
your survey got 75 churches or campus ministries.
Yes, yeah.
Mine just got 60.
Yeah.
But, one of the things I found was that we don't have 200 real campus ministries. There are a bunch of them that are nothing more than a Sunday morning college-age Bible class at the church building and nothing really on campus. So what would you estimate the number of real campus ministries?
There are no more than 148.
148.
We went through and called every single one of those.
Yeah.
And there are some we were never able to get a hold of, so we're not sure, but there are less than 150.
Yeah, Stringfellow was telling me that he helped with some of that calling.
Yes.
And that probably a third of them didn't even claim campus ministries anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's the microphone.